This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We'll begin today with reaction to the EPA's announcement that it will revoke ambitious new automobile emission standards and federal fuel efficiency goals. Those new standards were set in the Obama administration, and they would have required cars sold in the U.S. to average almost 55 miles per gallon by the year 2025. Well, yesterday, EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt announced that, quote, the Obama administration's determination was wrong. He said the standards were set with, quote, politically charged expediency, and that the Obama EPA, quote, made assumptions about standards that didn't comport with reality. Pruitt has also previously said that the automobile trade associations had complained to him that a 2016 public and industry comment period about the new standards was rushed. Those automaker lobbyists are now applauding Pruitt's latest decision. Well, Gina McCarthy was the head of the EPA when those new fuel and emission standards were created, and she joins us now. And Gina, first of all, let me just ask you, in 2016, during that public comment period, I mean, did those auto trade associations ever come to you and say, hey, things are too rushed?
Well, we certainly had a very robust technical document that we put out for public comment. They commented on it and many others. There were numerous meetings that took place over the course of a year. It was very deliberate, very public. We listened to everybody. And what we realized the actual data said was that there were more technology innovations available and readily available for the industry to use to make these standards, and that the costs associated with those had actually gone down in the interim.
But that's the opposite of what Scott Pruitt's saying in his statement, right? He says that the EPA made assumptions about standards that didn't comport with reality.
Well, you know, it doesn't surprise me that he says that because, frankly, I don't think this effort is being undertaken for the benefit of automakers. Many of them have said, we don't want a patchwork of regulation. We don't want to have the standards reopened. They've said they want to look at whether there are incentives within the standard setting that could be adjusted to address with some of their concerns. This is really all about just continued work by this administration to undermine or roll back everything that the Obama administration did or considered. That's really what this is all about. There is nothing in this packet of material that provides information to suggest that is actually going to be beneficial to public health, beneficial to our actions to address climate change, or beneficial to the industry itself.
So just, I mean, maybe you already just did, but I mean, when you heard that this rollback was happening, what was your first reaction? Because it sounds like you were saying that 54.5 miles per gallon average standard, the EPA believed, at least as of 2016, that it was achievable.
Yeah. And it still is. You know, they keep arguing that the industry is saying that they can't produce these cars. Well, they can, and they are. The only thing that results from this announcement is that the industry will be given a sense that they might as well sell all of those advanced vehicles over in China or the EU that are demanding them. But there is no way to say that they cannot produce them. They are producing them. These are cars that not only are more efficient so that we can lower the greenhouse gas emissions from the transportation sector, which is now the largest sector in our economy, but they are actually cars that will be cost effective for consumers to drive.
Right.
So cars that will help clean our air quality in urban areas.
I just want to jump in here because you're making an extraordinarily important point. And I want listeners to know that the European Union, for example, is aiming for a 56.8 miles per gallon average standard around 2020. So even 5 years before the U.S.'s, you know, now rolled back ambitious standards would have kicked in. So what you're saying is, like, we have U.S. auto manufacturers who are trying to sell millions of cars in those markets. They'll have to meet those standards, but they don't want to necessarily do the same thing here. So, I mean, but you worked with those same auto manufacturers during your time as EPA administrator. Can you help me understand why they want one thing? They're okay with one thing in one market, but not okay with it in the U.S. market?
Meghna, maybe this is a little bit naive of me, but, you know, I know that when President Trump first came in, the automakers were one of the first folks that went in there. Not the automakers themselves, but their lobbying group. And generally, lobbyists for industry tend to go to the lowest common denominator. They went in there and they asked for the moon. Now, nobody ever expected a president to say, how quickly do you want me to get you to the moon? Instead of saying, what is my job? What are the public health impacts? What are the health benefits? What are the concerns that this standard was supposed to address? None of that is referenced at all in this decision. So it was clearly industry went in, they asked for something, he said sure, and the agency is adjusting to make that happen. And I think we have to ask ourselves, do lobbying groups really represent their constituencies if their largest constituencies like Ford and Honda and others are standing up and saying, wait a minute, we really didn't want that. You know, it's sort of an oh, never mind time at this point because it's going to turn their world on its head.
Mm. Well, you know, current EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt is saying that if cleaner vehicles become too expensive, consumers are going to hold on to older cars and thereby basically lower the overall efficiency of the U.S. auto fleet on the road.
Well, the only problem with that statement is that's not consistent with history. You know, when we negotiated the settlement with the car industry, they agreed to continue to make them more efficient. And since then, they have had record sales. The only thing that's different this year is it's not a record this year. So it's not as if we're trying to bail out individual companies because they're overly burdened at this point, nor is it about consumers because they'll save more money the more we continue to make cars more efficient and do it reasonably.
I mean, we've been, to use an automobile metaphor, we've been down this road before, right? It seems like almost every time EPA has suggested improving standards, there is some pushback from the automobile industry. I mean, I was looking back at, 1974, a Chrysler engineer stood in front of a Senate committee and said new emission standards were going to essentially outlaw station wagons, large sedans. That obviously didn't happen. But I'm still confused about where the auto industry does stand on this. I mean, you mentioned Ford and Honda being exceptions right now, but Gloria Bergquist, who is a member or spokesperson for the Alliance of Automobile Manufacturers, in 2012 talked about then Obama-era policy, saying we all want to get more fuel-efficient autos on the roads, and a single national program with a strong midterm review will help us get closer to that goal. That same woman, Gloria Bergquist, said just this week of the new EPA take on fuel efficiency that this was the right decision. And we support the administration for pursuing a data-driven effort and a single national program as it works to finalize future standards. Now, that was background here. But Gina McCarthy, my question is, that question about a single national standard, is that the automobile industry basically saying they're looking at California and don't want California to have an exemption or the power to exempt itself? As it was granted by the Clean Air Act. So is that what's going on here?
I don't know. Maybe when you're on the verge of bankruptcy and you need the president to bail you out, you say a lot nicer things than when your industry is thriving and you'd rather not be regulated. Maybe it is as simple as that. But we know a national program is incredibly important. It's important for the industry, and it provides consistency across the United States for consumers. Now, whether this administration likes it or not, California has a waiver. That waiver has been part of our rulemaking for a very long time. And it's not just California, but there are over a dozen other states that actually joined them because their program is a little bit more aggressive than the national program has been before. But now we're totally aligned. It's important for the car companies to maintain that alliance. California has shown a willingness to sit down and talk, not so much about how we might weaken the standards, but what are the real concerns here? There's an opportunity here. California has expressed a willingness to talk. Why wouldn't you set that table before you take away an ability for us to maintain a national program and you run to court and fight? The only thing I can think of that would make you jump to that conclusion is that you want to project yourself as a fighter. As you can see from the numbers, these companies are thriving. Automakers are building cars that people want to drive. They need to continue to use what we know to be existing cost-effective technologies to keep that momentum moving forward. I do think many of them want to be part of the solution.
Last quick question. I've heard you in previous interviews just yesterday and today say that you found this decision by Scott Pruitt to be heartbreaking. What do you think the consequences may be for the environment and for public health in the United States?
Well, I think if something like this actually moved forward, then it really does throw a monkey wrench into how we use science and data to actually drive decision. Instead of using political public rhetoric to actually drive your decision making, you know, we did our best to make sure that we were relying on real facts and keeping the mission of the agency foremost, because that's what you're obligated to do when you're the administrator of EPA. And there's literally no evidence to suggest that cleaner cars will in some way prevent people from wanting to buy them, which seems to be their argument. You know, we know that people are buying new cars. We just want to have available the innovation and the technology here in the U.S. so we can enjoy the public health benefits here. And rather than shipping those clean cars off to other countries where they can clean up Beijing or where they can clean up the air quality in London, you know, let's make sure that we care about people in this country as well and keep our industry moving forward.
Well, Gina McCarthy was the administrator for the EPA from 2013 to 2017 under President Obama. She's currently director of Harvard's Center for Health and the Global Environment and an advisor at Pegasus Capital Advisors. Gina McCarthy, thank you as always.
Magna, it was great to be with you. Thank you.
So we want to dig in a little bit more into the science behind this EPA rollback. So let's hear from someone who once did emissions testing and research, both for EPA as well as major auto manufacturers. John German spent 13 years at EPA's Ann Arbor, Michigan Vehicles Testing Lab. After that, he managed environmental and energy analysis for Honda in the U.S. for more than a decade. He's now a senior fellow at the International Council on Clean Transportation, an independent nonprofit group that discovered the emissions cheating scandal by Volkswagen. John German, welcome to Radio Boston.
Yeah, thank you.
So first of all, I mean, sort of give it to me straight here. Is Scott Pruitt's decision, do you think it's based on science or politics right now?
Well, it certainly does not appear to be based on science. That the original analyses for the rulemaking were done in 2012. And if you look at the technology that's going into the fleet now, there are a lot of technologies that the 2012 analysis didn't even know were coming. And so we have a lot of new technologies. Things are happening at lower cost than originally projected, and all of a sudden they can't do it.
So help me understand this here. Are you saying that auto manufacturers, U.S. auto manufacturers, are actually quite close already to achieving standards that that EPA would have set for 2025?
Well, keep in mind that 2025 is still 7 years away. Also, there's carry forward and carry back provisions, so you can actually put technology in 2027 and 2028 and carry it back to 2025. So 2025 is still quite a ways out there, and you have to do a lot of projections as to what's going to be feasible by then. But all I'm trying to say is that there's already a lot of technologies in production or have been announced to go in production that the 2012 analyses didn't even consider.
Yeah. So,
and there's more coming all the time.
Okay, so maybe this sort of goes a little way to explaining why these same auto manufacturers, you know, who seek to sell cars in, say, China, South Korea, or the European Union, the latter two who are aiming for 57 miles per gallon by 2020 and 2021, that they're going to have cars that meet those standards in those nations, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. So then help me understand. I mean, you've had experience at both EPA and with the auto manufacturers themselves. Why is it that it seems as some of these major car makers are pushing to have standards relaxed here in the United States?
I think it's important to understand just how risk-averse manufacturers are. Toyota mislocated the accelerator pedal and by less than an inch, and it cost them billions of dollars. And so the industry just doesn't like to think that anything is going to work until it's been proven in production. And they're always worried that things won't develop as anticipated. And so the more time you give them to test different options, the more secure they can be that the thing's actually going to work. But just because they have that mindset doesn't mean that they're right, that 80-90% of these technologies work as good or better than projected. There's only a small number of technologies that they're actually create a problem. And there's still quite a bit of time to work things out. These standards are absolutely going to be easier to meet than originally anticipated.
Right. So this is really interesting to me because, you know, in terms of your accelerator pedal example, you know, I understand that one because it also, I mean, it led to huge losses for the car company. People were worried about unintended acceleration, things like that. But here we're talking about the development of fuel efficiency standards. And again, I keep coming, listeners are probably going to tell me to get off of this, but I keep coming back to this idea that other nations around the world are setting these standards, doing the testing, and American car manufacturers are global companies, right? So where's the uncertainty then? Because they're certainly going to have to meet certain standards in Europe or South Korea or China.
Right. I think that part of the disconnect comes from the fact that not all manufacturers are speaking with the same voice. I think that's a lot of the confusion
right. That's
going on here. They don't seem to have a unified position. A company like Honda that does sell the same car across the world, you know, they're being much more reasonable and still asking for a single standard in the U.S. But if you look at a company like Fiat Chrysler, their high-volume products in the U.S. are pickup trucks and minivans. They don't sell these vehicles anywhere else in the world, really.
I see.
And so getting a rollback here could potentially help Fiat Chrysler.
I see. Interesting. So what about the notion that the increased fuel efficiency standards make cars and trucks more expensive, and that is something that EPA Administrator Pruitt is saying, you know, could actually prevent people from buying more efficient cars. Is that what we saw in the past?
It's not what we saw in the past, but I also want to focus on a slightly different factor, which is, yes, the standards cause the price of the vehicle to go up, but if you're saying that this increased price is going to affect sales, you are completely ignoring the fact that the vehicle gets better fuel economy. And you're implicitly saying is that customers won't pay a dime for a vehicle with better fuel economy. And we know that's wrong.
Yeah.
We know that the large majority of customers do value 2 or 3 years or 4 years of fuel savings. They do take that into account when they buy vehicles. And if you actually look at taking out a 5 or 6 year car loan, and the increased cost that the technology adds to that monthly payment, the fuel savings each month are larger than that. So even from month one, the owner is pocketing money. There's no reason for them to not buy the new vehicles.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm curious. You've been in the auto industry, again, both with EPA and manufacturers for a long time. And it seems to me that there's part of the conversation we haven't had yet is that since, what, the 1970s, part of the point of some of these emission standards was to force the development of new technology, right? And that worked, right? We got a catalytic converter, fuel injection, things like that, which are standard parts of every car that's made worldwide now. So does the United States potentially stand to lose a technological edge here if we're sort of relaxing our standards when other nations are not?
Well, it was only a decade ago that GM and Chrysler went bankrupt. Yeah, I mean, there is a real risk with losing and falling behind in the technology race, is that if you're not competitive with European and Chinese manufacturers, you're going to pay the price.
Huh. Well, John German is Senior Fellow at the International Council on Clean Transportation. It's an independent nonprofit organization. He formerly worked at EPA's Auto Emissions Testing Lab in Michigan and has over a decade of experience working for Honda USA. John German, thank you so very much for joining us today.
Yeah, I'm very welcome.
And by the way, we have a little bit of news here that Attorney General Maura Healey has signed onto a statement about these new the EPA rollback, saying if the administration attempts to deny states and cities the basic right to protect their citizens, we will strongly challenge such an effort in court. A nod there to the fact that the state of California is probably going to sue the Trump administration over the EPA rollback. And, you know, for this conversation, we overall wanted to stick to matters of science and policy regarding the EPA today. But yes, there are also current political and ethical controversies surrounding EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt. You've probably heard the news that Pruitt rented a room from a Washington, D.C. energy lobbyist for some $50 per night. Well, President Trump did call Pruitt in a show of support last night in a phone call. And today, in meeting with Baltic leaders, Trump also said of Pruitt, quote, "I hope he's going to be great." Stay with us. We've got a lot more ahead. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.